All Business and Financial Radio Network, Voice America Business.
Good morning, and thank you for joining host Cheryl Esposito for an intriguing hour of Leading Conversations. Each week, Cheryl brings together big thinkers to the Voice America Business Channel. Now here's your host, Cheryl Esposito.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Leading Conversations. This is Cheryl Esposito. Today we have a special guest, Barry Bergman, Confessions of a Rock and Roll CEO. Barry's going to share with us some of his stories about how he came up as a leader through the ranks and learned how to run a company pretty much on his own, and some of the lessons that have stuck with him over the years and served him well. Barry has had several other companies, one of them being Bear Essentials, which is a cosmetic company, which he and his business partner grew to a very large number, and ultimately sold it. And, you know, it's a great story. Barry, welcome this morning.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Glad to have you here.
Nice to see you.
Yeah. So where are you today?
I'm in Santa Barbara, California, where the weather is gorgeous, as always.
As always, yes, yes. It's a beautiful place in the world. Now,
lovely.
But you're not from California, are you?
I'm from North Carolina originally, Durham, North Carolina, where Duke University is, and that's where I went to school. I grew up there and went to school there.
Oh, so you must be a basketball team fan.
Yes, and I was down in the Final Four last week as cheering for the University of North Carolina, which was sort of a sad weekend for us, but being in San Antonio.
Well, you know, you still have to have loyalty, right?
Yeah. I went to Duke, but I'm a Carolina fan. I know that's very strange.
You got to do what you got to do. So today, you know, we titled this Confessions of a Rock and Roll CEO because you have a background in the music industry. And let's talk a bit about how you got started in the music industry and kind of the environment that you were playing in when you started.
Well, I started working in a record store for my uncle when I was, I don't know, 13, 14 years old. And I knew pretty quickly that that was what I wanted to do for my life's work. I just loved the business. And I always thought I would go to New York and work for a record manufacturing company, but I ended up in the retail business. My wife and I opened a retail store in Chapel Hill in 1963, and we started expanding. My parents owned a store in Durham, where Duke was, and Chapel Hill is where the University of North Carolina is. That's where we opened our store. And we started expanding in 1968, and my parents got out a few years after that, and we ended up with 180 record stores all over the country.
Wow!
So it was learn while you earn. I mean, I was a history major in college. I didn't have any business background particularly, except the stuff my father had taught me, and it was a fascinating experience. I never did it to make any money. It was so much fun, and the music business was so much fun. I always liked the action. I learned how, over a long period of time, to go from running a record store to running a fairly large, or a medium-sized business.
Yeah.
And try how to manage people.
Well, and at the time, a lot of the musicians that were up and coming, you were connected to in a lot of ways. You know, how did that work back then?
Well, it was always a small business, and the musicians, they realized that the easiest way to get their stuff exposed, other than being on the radio, was to have people in record stores like their music and suggest it to people. So they gravitated towards retail record chains, and since that was why I was in the business anyway, because I love the music, to be involved with artists was just a wonderful thing. It's very exciting to me. So it worked both ways.
You know, I read a little bit that you were involved with celebrities like Lyle Lovett and Larry Gatlin and Jimmy Buffett and Harry Chapin. I mean, you know, that time, it's almost like those musicians were really on an edge of something new. You know, it feels to me anyway like, you know, there was a big shift happening in music around that time. Is that true?
Well, all the people you talked about were singer-songwriters.
Uh-huh.
And that's the people I gravitate towards because they're all poets, basically, and they're just fascinating people. Wonderful ways to express what they're thinking about. And we got a chance to see music change and become part of the lifestyle of most Americans because we started in 63. In 64, the Beatles broke.
Right.
And that changed everything about our business.
Right.
We had Elvis before that, but when the Beatles happened, then everybody had to be a part of the music. Everybody had to be a part of the music, and the music had to be a part of everybody, and that's what brought on the 60s. We had a first-row seat for the 60s in Chapel Hill, because that was one of the places that a lot of the ferment took place.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was really fascinating, and the music was so much a part of that.
Yeah.
So we got to know a lot of the artists who were involved. It was a fascinating time.
Well, you know, I'm tempted to ask you who was your favorite, but I know that that would get you in trouble.
Well, I've got a few favorites, but if I had to pick one, it'd probably be Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen, huh?
Yeah.
And what would make him your favorite?
He's, if you've ever seen him live,
yeah,
it's absolutely magical. He comes out and does 3 or 4 hours live, and it's a religious experience. It's just amazing. And his music on record is wonderful, but it doesn't give you any idea of what the experience is of seeing him. And the Stones would be another huge favorite of mine.
Right.
And certainly James Brown.
Ah, now, there is a legend.
Yes. Yeah, we were fortunate enough to get to know him.
Oh,
he was a character. He was really something. At the time, we were in the music business. Early on there, North Carolina had a law that you couldn't integrate a dance floor. So they used to have these big dances in Durham where I lived. And they would bring these artists in. There was a circuit called a Chitlin Circuit in the South. And all the great black artists like James Brown and Chuck Berry, Fats Domino, they all played there. So my wife and I used to go to these dances, and they would have a white balcony. It was the most amazing thing.
Boy.
There would be 2,000 black people dancing on the floor, and they would have 10 or 15 white kids up top. So since my uncle owned the record store in town, and we sold tickets for the dances, I used to get backstage, and
so I got
to meet all these people.
So I got
to meet James. We were standing outside a dance one time, and the promoter was trying to get up enough money so he could pay James, because James Brown would not go on stage until he got all his money in cash. The promoter said, "Would you like to meet James Brown?" We said, "Sure." So he brought James out, and we talked to him for a while. And finally, they started to get enough money, and James said, "Are you going to the dance?" And we said, "Sure." And he said, and he didn't know we had tickets, but so he said to the person at the door, he took out the biggest wad of money I've ever seen in my life, peeled off $200 bills, gave it to the woman at the door, and said, "Here, let my friends in."
Oh my God!
It was one of the all-time great gestures. You know?
Oh wow!
So James had me after that.
Yeah, I bet he has heart, huh? Or had heart?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
he was wonderful.
Great. Well, what would you think, I mean, if you think back to the time that you were there, you know, it must have been, in some ways, you know, as a young man, there must have been this sense of wide-eyed wonder, you know, like, wow, am I really here? Were you experiencing that?
My wife Arlene and I, used to get in these situations where we'd meet these people, or we'd be at these functions, and we'd go, can you believe this is happening to us? Because we were just kids from small town North Carolina.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing ride. It was really wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Very special.
Well, and I bet that sense of being curious about the world and not taking that for granted really fed you as you built your business and really probably drew people to you, because they're in that there's no arrogance.
Well, yeah, and we were very fortunate early on. We were doing business in this triangle area of North Carolina that everybody knows about now, but they didn't then.
Huh.
Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, where there were these three major universities. But there wasn't a heck of a lot to do there.
Right.
Tobacco was there. And everybody said, what's going to happen when tobacco leaves? Because we all thought they would eventually.
Huh.
And we figured the place would dry up and blow away. Well, high tech came and took over, but we didn't know that. And so our company was one of the few places that people could get out of school and stay around and work for and have some sort of career path.
Right.
So we had the opportunity to hire just wonderful people who normally we couldn't have paid them enough to stay, but they wanted to live in that area because it was such a great place to live.
Oh, wow.
And so it really helped us build a company.
Well, and the company, the name of the company was Record Bar.
Correct.
And it went on to have huge growth. And
we called some of our stores later Tracks, and then we had stores on the West Coast called Licorice Pizza.
Oh, Licorice Pizza. Now, see, yeah. I grew up in the West Coast, and so I know
Licorice Pizza. We owned that chain
pizza
for a while. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so let's see, I'm telling my age here. I remember Licorice Pizza.
Yeah.
And for me, having grown up in the Bay Area, which was a hotbed of the music industry too, I was a little bit more into the, a little bit of the rock and roll type, the Fleetwood Macs, et cetera, were all being developed here. And, I see that on both coasts, on the East Coast and the West Coast, it seemed like that's where the music was really happening. And I'm curious to know more about how you saw the industry shift and develop, as it grew, and how place matters around that. And we're going to talk more about that when we come back right after this break.
All we talk about is money. Call us toll-free, 866-472-5790, and talk to the experts. We talk money all the time. Voice America Business.
Leadership is not static. It evolves as you do. At Alexa Consulting, we work with CEOs, senior leaders, and leaders in transition who want to make a difference. Leaders who believe that good business is good for people, good for the world, and knows that conscious actions can have global impact. Are you ready to take your leadership to the next level? If you are, then visit our website at www.alexaconsulting.com. That's www.alexaconsulting.com. Alexa Consulting, developing leaders worldwide. More and more business people recognize the importance of spirituality in their work. How do busy professionals discover what rings true for them? Embracing the Journey with Karen Humphrey-Salick explores what it means to be spiritually fulfilled in business and how to integrate spiritual direction into a career. Expert guests, authors, and inspiring speakers join Karen every week to discuss such issues as honesty, compassion, generosity, ethics, and integrity in the workplace. Take a positive step forward to greater life balance. Tune into Embrace the Journey with Karen Humphrey-Salick, broadcasting every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel, the bottom line in business talk.
Money, up-to-date business and financial news. Money. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
We appreciate you joining our Leading Conversations today. If you would like to participate in today's conversation, please call us now at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now back to your host, Cheryl.
And welcome back this morning. We're speaking with Barry Bergman, Confessions of a Rock and Roll CEO. Barry, before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about the music industry and how you were a child of the music industry and helped to shape some of it. Now, you know, the West Coast and the East Coast of the U.S. Certainly influenced how music developed in the 60s and 70s, and I dare say that still happens today. What do you think it is about the coasts and the people on the coast that influences the music industry so much?
Well, one thing that I learned is that music happens everywhere. It happened on the coast, and it happened in the middle of the country. And you had grunge bands develop in Seattle.
Yeah.
And you had what happened in San Francisco, that incredible explosion in the 60s. And in Chapel Hill, we even had James Taylor. He's from Chapel Hill. There's music everywhere, and it tends to be regionalized because, like, the doo-wop sound that came out of New York, and the Gloria Estefan and that kind of music that came from Miami, it tends to be the kind of music that develops where, you know, different kinds of people live, and so you can find it everywhere. It's fascinating, and you can't just say that music only comes from one place.
Right. So you must have had a lot of experiences with musicians that are memorable. Can you think of a couple that you'd like to share?
Well, yeah, we've gotten to meet so many wonderful people. The two that stand out for me was we were in London in the early 70s, and I got to meet George Harrison, and that was really something, because I remember we took a picture with him, and thinking at the time, if it's not for this guy, I'm not here. I got no business. You know, this guy and his band made so much of what happened in our lives. The other one that really stands out is that we got to meet and spend some time with Roy Rogers and Dale Evans one time. Roy had made an album, and Roy was my my hero growing up.
Really?
And to meet him was just wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's very special. But we've had so many experiences like that of meeting people, and we got to go to the White House a bunch of times when Jimmy Carter was in office, because
He
was very involved in the music business. And those kinds of experiences, which just wouldn't have happened to us if we hadn't been in the music business.
So how is it you got to the White House? What was going on that got you there?
Phil Walden, who owned Capricorn Records, was a close friend of ours, and Capricorn was from Macon, Georgia, and he helped Jimmy Carter get elected. His bands, the Allman Brothers, Marshall Tucker, they played gigs for Jimmy Carter and raised money when Carter didn't have any money.
Right.
So Phil was sort of important to Carter, and through him, Carter felt like he owed a debt to the music business. So when he was in office, there were a number of events that we got to go to, which was really, it was fun, and I don't care what your politics are. Walking in the front door of the White House is a very special experience.
Yeah, I bet. Wow, that's amazing. And who knew Jimmy Carter was involved in the music, you know, was interested in the music business at that level, you know? I mean, you hear about when Clinton was in office, it was very well publicized and very well connected to the music industry, but I don't know how many people actually knew that about Jimmy Carter.
And he was I can remember being at the White House and hearing Willie Nelson there, because Carter was a big Willie Nelson fan.
Oh, cool.
There were many, many musical events with lots of artists. It was a great time for the music business.
Oh, that's great. Well, now you must have, it seems like you are an observer of the human spirit, and I'm curious to know what lessons you may have learned from the musicians that you encountered.
Well, the biggest one is, I have to quote Mr. Jagger and Mr. Richards here. Yeah, it's only rock and roll, but I like it. You can't get too serious about this stuff, and that's what we used to try to get our employees to think about when we were running the record company. Was it was only rock and roll. It was, don't be so serious.
Yeah.
Just have fun.
Yeah.
And we had just a great company to work for. We had a big time. We never lost a party. It was that's why we tried to run our stores.
Right.
So it felt good to work there, and it felt good for consumers. It was a pleasurable experience to come into one of our stores. It was supposed to be fun.
It is supposed to be fun, and I'm always surprised when I go into a retail experience and people seem like they are, like they have no energy, or they seem like they have no investment in whether I buy something or don't buy something, and I think, what is going on here, you know? How did you make sure that it wasn't like that?
Well, one of the things we used to tell our employees is, look, you got to be here all day anyway. So if you're nice to customers, they'll be nice back to you, and you'll enjoy your day a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So try it that way.
Wow.
And
simple,
you,
right?
You know, yeah. If what you put out, you get back.
Mm.
And so our stores were fun places to shop, and there was a lot of, because I had learned that when I worked in the store. I worked
right.
there for a long time.
Right, right. So you really came up through the ranks. I mean, you started out, as you said earlier, working in your dad's store, and you were probably, you know, doing everything in the store, right? You know, sweeping up and.
Yeah, and when I became a manager, that was one of the first things I learned. I figured out that if I could get other people to sweep up at the end of the day, I didn't have to do that or all the other chores that I don't want to do. So I became an ace delegator pretty quickly, which put me in, as a manager later on, and then as a CEO, I learned that I couldn't do all this stuff myself.
Yeah.
And I needed to get other people to do it, and then I needed to get good people to do it.
Right. Well, and they needed to like doing it, right?
Yeah, well, that was the general idea.
Right.
So if we could make the employment, if we could make the work experience fun, our people, they prospered in the environment, and they stayed, and they, you know, it worked for everybody.
Right.
And the customers could feel it, too. They could feel it in the stores.
Well, now, as you were growing into such a large organization, I imagine that you had not only store employees, but then you had more of the administrative executive group that, you know, didn't hang out in the stores every day. How did you infuse that culture into that specific group of people?
Well, one of the things in our office is if you walked around our office, everybody was playing music.
Yeah,
it was a music company.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and there were lots of posters on the wall, and there was all kinds of activity and energy in our office.
Yeah.
So it reflected the business we were in.
Right.
It was
right.
a really fun place to work.
Wow.
And and we also tried real hard to set up an environment that typically in retail companies, it's the stores versus the office and the warehouse.
Right.
Well, we didn't want to do that. We didn't want to have that. We worked real hard to say to our people in the office and the warehouse that the stores were our customers.
Mm-hmm.
And customer service was
mm-hmm.
what our company was mm-hmm. about. So their way of customer service was servicing our stores.
Right.
We worked real hard on that.
Right, right. And, you know, that was, when was that? That was about the 70s?
Well, we sold the company in 1989, so
okay.
we went through that.
Okay, so you were, you know, I mean, customer service was being acknowledged as, you know, an advantage, a strategic advantage for organizations at the time, but, you know, not a lot of organizations knew what to do with that. So it sounds like you were really kind of on the cutting edge.
Well, we had the same music to sell as everybody else.
Right.
We had they were about the same prices. If you wanted to compete on prices, the record business had very low markups. Mm-hmm. Our cost of goods was 62%. So you couldn't very well compete on price,
right,
you know, unless you were stupid. So the place to compete on was customer service,
right,
location,
right,
and customer service.
Right.
We were in malls, and that was where we tried to differentiate ourselves from other companies.
And so by the time it was time to sell, were you ready to sell?
No. I loved going to work. I enjoyed what I was doing.
Yeah.
But there was activity, mergers and acquisitions activity in the music business. For some reason, people decided they needed to be in the music business. You know, there was this glow that came from the business.
Mm-hmm.
And we got an offer we literally couldn't refuse.
Oh, yeah. Well, there must have been a lot of people crying that day.
Yeah, there were. And I was among them. However,
yeah.
I got to be rich, too. So it wasn't the worst thing in the world.
That's right. It worked out for you.
Yeah.
Well, now, before you sold, though, did you go through a time period where you were a little less hands-on as a leader?
Yeah, I had a few years before got bored and stepped back and hired a psychologist to be a CEO, which was really a stupid thing to do. I mean, when I think back, I looked at our company sort of as a social laboratory.
Oh, yeah.
We were doing all kinds of strange things. And so that turned into a disaster. And we did not do well for a while, and I had to come back in riding on my white charger to save the company.
And people
but I
were
was the one that had screwed it up in the first place. So.
Oh, you take responsibility for that. Well, that's
both
good.
Ways.
Yeah,
both
that's,
ways.
That's good. Yeah, it's a good leadership move there. And you know, not specifically to rank on this guy, but what was happening in general that wasn't working?
We got into several businesses that we had no business being in.
Oh.
They weren't our core business.
Okay.
We got into the wholesale distribution of videotape.
Oh.
Of movies. And that was a receivables business. We'd never been in the receivables business. We got huge receivables. We just were not concentrating on our core business, which was running record stores and malls.
Right.
And that's
right.
What we did well. And as soon as we got out of all these other businesses and started doing that again, then we did very, very well again.
Uh-huh.
We started to grow. It was very quick. All we had to do was restore confidence in our people that we were going to be in business next
right.
week.
Right.
And that we had done some really stupid things by cutting inventories. And, you know, you cut inventories and son of a gun, the sales went down. So we cut inventories again and son of a gun, the sales went down. Like those kinds of things.
Gee, go figure.
Yeah, go figure.
Well, we've got more to learn from Barry Birdman. We'll be right back.
We talk about his money. Call us toll free, 866-472-5790, and talk to the experts. We talk money all the time. Voice America Business.
Leadership is not static. It evolves as you do. At Alexa Consulting, we work with CEOs, senior leaders, and leaders in transition who want to make a difference. Leaders who believe that good business is good for people, good for the world, and knows that conscious actions can have global impact. Are you ready to take your leadership to the next level? If you are, then visit our website at www.alexaconsulting.com. That's www.alexaconsulting.com. Alexa Consulting, developing leaders worldwide.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. There you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The economy and financial markets continue to expand in both their size and complexity, but being able to anticipate changes in the markets for housing, jobs, and financial assets remains a crucial ingredient to our financial well-being. On the economy and the markets, with economist, investment strategist, portfolio manager, and host, Doug Cligget, utilizes his 25 years of experience with that of his highly informed guests to provide clear, reasoned explanations of current events. To navigate the markets that influence our lives every day of the week, tune into The Economy and the Markets with Doug Cligget, broadcasting each Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. The Economy and the Markets. Clear thoughts in a complex world.
Stocks, bonds, 401ks, investments, refinancing. We can help you. Call now toll free, 866-472-5790, 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
We appreciate you joining our leading conversations today. If you would like to participate in today's conversation, please call us now at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now back to your host, Cheryl.
Welcome back, everybody, to Leading Conversations. This is Cheryl Esposito. We're speaking with Barry Bergman. Barry, before we went to break, you were talking about the journey you took along the music industry. And then you, after selling the company, after selling Record Bar and some of the other organizations that were part of that, you didn't do much for a while. Did you take some time off?
I ran a record company, a manufacturing company for the people who bought us for about a year.
Oh.
Which went nowhere because they took away my funding after a year.
Oh, wow.
They got into trouble.
Okay.
And I didn't do anything. I had an office, but I didn't really do much for a couple of years.
And so then you met a partner. Now, John Hansen, was he a business partner in the past?
Yeah, I had done business with John. He had worked for General Atlantic, an investment company that had an investment in Record Bar.
Okay.
And knew him.
Okay, so you guys decided to partner up and have some business investments, and one of those was a company called Bare Essentials. And this now takes you from the music industry into the cosmetic industry, which I guess you could say they're somewhat connected, kind of maybe, not really. You know, what drew you to a company in the cosmetic industry?
Well, John found the company, and I immediately, when he showed it to me, I really liked it because the cosmetics company has about as high a markup as you can find.
Mm.
It was Bare Essentials. The last time I looked, the cost of goods was about 28%.
Wow.
And from a cost of goods of 62% in the record business. So
right.
I liked that business quickly.
Yeah.
And John found the company when they were in a bankruptcy.
Oh.
They had four stores in a bankruptcy.
Uh-huh.
So we bought the company out of the bankruptcy, closed two stores, and started to expand it.
Well, and so you bought it to turn it around. What about that company, besides the fact that, you know, cost of goods was, you know, a good price point, what about it made you think that you could do something and take this big?
Well, I've got a general idea how to sell things.
Mm-hmm.
And John just thought he could expand it, and he wanted to do something entrepreneurial.
Okay.
It's an interesting business. It was sort of a knockoff of the body shop.
It's not
a big company.
Right.
So, and that was a pretty good idea. No animal testing, no chemicals.
Right.
Product. It was a good product.
Yeah.
And we just thought the company had been managed very well, but it had a good idea.
Oh, okay. And it's still a good product today.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful product.
It has endured. It's
doing very well.
Yeah. And so what was your role in that? Were you simply an investor? What was your leadership role in that?
Well, I was going to be a passive investor, but from early on I was involved because John hadn't really been in retail, and I knew retail.
Oh, yeah.
So so we worked together very, very well. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of his consultant, and we talked a lot. And I like organizations, and we were trying to build an organization.
Yeah.
And I worked a lot trying to help John do that too.
And so, how did you get to the strategy, taking this even bigger, where you have a huge public presence?
We were sort of rocking along. We had been doing it for about 7 years. We had about a store, maybe 22 stores, something like that. And we decided we needed a merchandiser. And we hired a woman who had been a brand manager from Neutrogena. Her name is Leslie Blodgett.
Mm.
And we got real smart overnight. John later left to go be a CEO of a public company, and when he did that, Leslie took over running the company.
Oh.
And she had grown up in the cosmetics business. She
uh-huh.
had worked behind the counter at Bloomie's on Long Island, and she just has a sensibility
right.
for it. She understands why women want to buy cosmetics.
Right, right.
And she knows how to sell them, beside the fact that she's a genius.
Ah, yeah.
And that's when we got real smart.
Hey, you know, sometimes it takes a woman, not that I'm biased or anything, you know, but sometimes it helps.
Well, I agree. I mean,
yeah.
And it's very interesting because in the cosmetics business, if you look around, most of the companies are still run by men.
I know,
which I find
isn't that weird?
Incomprehensible. Yeah.
Yeah, it is odd. Very
yeah,
odd.
Because I have no sensibility for the cosmetics business. I mean, like I said, I know how to sell stuff, but it really is a woman's business, and women understand the business better.
Right, right. So your rosy cheeks are natural.
Oh yeah, absolutely. All the makeup I'm wearing presently is natural.
So I know that Leslie had the idea to take and put the product on QVC, which was at the time was a shopping channel on cable, and it was new, and there was a lot of controversy over it being, you know, kind of a rinky-dink kind of a thing, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of credibility, and even though people would sell a lot of products, it was still so not really readily accepted. What made you guys decide to, you know, to take the chance?
Leslie called me one day, and she said, I've been having trouble sleeping. I've been staying up at night watching QVC, and I can do that. I can sell our product on QVC. And I said, well, why would you want to? They don't sell anything. Well,
yeah.
I haven't heard a late number, but 2 years ago, QVC did $5.5 billion.
Oh.
So they're selling something to somebody. But I didn't know that because
right.
I never watched it and didn't buy anything. And she went on there, and the first, it was supposed to be for an hour, and she never got through the hour because she sold out before she got through.
Mm.
And she did more business in that first hour than we were doing in a year in a store.
Wow.
So it didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that there was something there.
Right.
And it just took off.
Wow.
Every time she would go on, she would sell everything that she had. And she rarely got the whole time that was allotted to her because she would sell out before she could finish the time.
Fascinating.
Yeah, because she is a terrific salesperson.
Yeah.
And she believed in the product, and it was like a party when she was on. It was fun, and she had fun with their other people who were on the air, plus the models, and it was. And she built up a tremendous following, and it started to explode. And then a couple of years later, she called me again and said, look, we need to do an infomercial. I can sell this stuff on an infomercial. And then once again, showing how smart I was, I said, what, nobody sells anything on an infomercial because I never bought anything. Hey, you got to be careful about projection of your own beliefs and values. So she did an infomercial, and it did the same thing again. It took us forever took us over a year before we shot the infomercial because we kept looking for a celebrity spokesperson.
Oh, yeah.
And we kept talking to all these people, and they would hold us up for huge amounts of money and a piece of the company. And Leslie finally said, look, this is ridiculous. I can do this. I can go on there, and we don't need a celebrity spokesperson. I can go do it. And she said, but I don't want models. I just want to get normal women, and we're going to do makeovers. And she was absolutely spot on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm telling you, she has a special genius for knowing how to sell this stuff.
That's really interesting. You know, what occurs to me is that you were really modeling what you believe. You know, you said, you know, kind of give people the resources and get out of their way, and you were doing that, even though there were things that you weren't quite familiar with, but you were willing to let her do it, and she clearly was having fun. And that was also one of your principles. You know, you got to have fun. And so you were really modeling great leadership there. And then she has turned into an amazing leader, and she's very well respected. And, you know, talk a little bit about your relationship in the business, you know, as you saw her growing into a real strong leader. What was your role?
Well, when she first took over the company, she was concerned because she'd never run anything.
Mm.
And I said, look, you take it over, and I'll be your personal consultant. I'll teach you how to manage.
Mm-hmm.
I'll teach you how to run something. So we used to talk pretty much on a daily basis about how to do that.
Right.
And, you know, and it's not that hard. It's not rocket science. And particularly when somebody, she's an attractive, charismatic person. People follow her.
Right.
And so it was fairly easy to teach her how to lead.
Mm.
It wasn't that hard.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I believe very strongly that best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. Well, she's successful. She's been successful in everything she's done, and she has an innate sense of what will work, and particularly in the business she's in.
Mm-hmm.
She really knows how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easy to let her to get out of her way.
Right.
I mean, after a while, I didn't care what she said. Whatever she wanted to do was okay with me, whether I understood it or not.
Just nod your head, yes, please, just go do it.
That's exactly right. I mean, as a manager, you know, that's not the hardest. It's a hard style to understand. Once you can get your ego out of it, it's very, very simple.
Yeah. Right, right, yeah. Well, you know, I'm curious to know kind of how things have moved forward for you, because what you did with her is essentially how you have now crafted your own business and your own contribution to life on this planet. And we're going to learn more about that when we come back right after this break.
We talk about his money. Call us toll-free, 866-472-5790, and talk to the experts. We talk money all the time. Voice America Business.
Leadership is not static. It evolves as you do. At Alexa Consulting, we work with CEOs, senior leaders, and leaders in transition who want to make a difference. Leaders who believe that good business is good for people, good for the world, and knows that conscious actions can have global impact. Are you ready to take your leadership to the next level? If you are, then visit our website at www.alexaconsulting.com. That's www.alexaconsulting.com. Alexa Consulting, developing leaders worldwide.
Why is Pepsi cooler than Coke? Why are iPods so popular? In 2005, how can you launch a successful brand? Want to know? Learn about the fascinating and intriguing world of graphic design and branding on Design Matters with Debbie Millman. Every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time, Debbie Millman will provide you with a provocative look into the stimulating world of design as it intersects with contemporary culture. Hear what the experts have to say about creating, maintaining, and launching a brand in today's challenging marketplace. Join us every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time for Design Matters with Debbie Millman, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
talk about is money, call us toll-free, 866-472-5790, and talk to the experts. We talk money all the time. Voice America Business.
We appreciate you joining our Leading Conversations today. If you would like to participate in today's conversation, please call us now at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now back to your host, Cheryl.
And we're speaking with Barry Bergman today, who went from rock and roll CEO to a very successful business person in his own right, and has grown many businesses to success and has made a lot of money, and we all like that, and has done it while being nice and not being cutthroat and believing that you can do well by other people and still be successful. Barry, why do you think that this still seems like an anomaly? You know, why is that even getting press?
Because we hear too much that you got to be a jerk to be a successful business person, and we watch programs with somebody saying you're fired and think that's funny,
right?
You know, or think that's a neat thing. And And the most successful television program is a program where people literally beat up aspiring artists, and everybody laughs at that. I've been in that position before, to have to tell somebody who has spent their lives trying to be a recording artist that it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
And believe me, that is not funny.
Right.
It's not any fun.
Right. Are you talking about American Idol?
I am. That's why I don't watch it.
Yeah.
Because I can't stand what they do.
Well, it's kind of painful.
Yeah,
and, you know, that really is counter to your philosophy of how, you know, people are basically good, and you can help them find the good in themselves.
It's been my experience. I mean, it's not just something I think. It really does work.
Yeah, you know, I like that you say that. You know, I read that you said, you know, I'm not going to tell people to go love their neighbor just because it's the right thing to do. And you know, yeah, it's right, but it also works. And you know, you showed this in Record Bar. You know, you showed this with Bare Essentials. How are you using that with the clients that you have these days? Because I know you have your own consulting practice where, you know, just like you worked with Leslie to teach her how to run the business as a strong leader, you know, you're doing that today with many other clients. You don't have to name names, but, you know, do you have a story that you can share with us that, you know, where you really saw some light bulb go on with somebody?
Yeah, well, with my clients, what I've tried to get them to do is treat their customers and treat their employees with respect and caring and love them. And my experience is if you do that it comes back to you.
Right.
Employees work hard. If you've got a good idea, they execute the idea, and it makes that work.
Right.
And then and customers understand it too. They get it.
Right.
Because it all comes through, and it comes around. What goes around comes around.
Right.
And Buckminster Fuller said, "Treat the universe in an ethical manner, and it'll take care of you." And that's been my experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've written a book. It's called "We'll Get Rich a Few Days Later," which is something I said in business a lot. If we couldn't do it ethically, honestly, and lovingly, let's not do it. We'll get rich a few days later.
I love that title.
Yeah.
So, where is that book?
Well, hopefully, it's going to get published. I'm looking for a publisher right now.
Uh huh. Oh, very cool. So you must in that book have some of the basics. Obviously, you know, treat people well. What are a couple of other tips that you would have for people?
Well, you got to think in the long term.
Mm.
That's important. I've been an overnight sensation twice. The first time it took me about 25 years, and the second time it took me 14 years.
Oh boy!
So my experience of a lot of young people today is that they're looking for a fast win,
right?
Something that'll take a year or two.
If
it hasn't happened in 3 years, there's something really wrong.
Right.
That is not my experience at all. It takes time. It takes hard work. I mean, you know, all those cliched things. You got to be smart. That's what I've seen.
Right.
So that is, treat people well, take the time, and I have this theory. It's the theory of hanging around. You got to hang around. So when something really good happens, you're there. So and hanging around takes a while. You got to be around for a while.
You got to be around. But how do you reconcile that in today's day and age? You know, I mean, you've got the pressure to perform, to hit the numbers, to, you know, make the stockholders whole. And, you know, it seems like our capitalist system doesn't have patience. The system doesn't support what you're talking about.
Who's the most successful investor in the country? Who's the one man everybody always looks at? Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett, yeah.
Look at his theories. Look at what the guy thinks. He buys good companies and he sits with them.
Right, right.
So it seems to me that a lot of people are using the wrong model.
Huh.
If a guy like Buffett can be the most successful investor in the United States,
right?
When the last time we had a bubble before the present bubble. I knew we were in trouble when they started to say Warren Buffett was stupid and he didn't know what he was doing. You know? And then the next thing was in earnings don't count.
That's right.
We were in big trouble.
Because he didn't invest heavily in tech, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why I remember that.
Turned out he was smart and they weren't.
It worked out for him.
it's such a great style and it's a terrific idea.
Yeah.
I mean, he's my hero. He's wonderful.
Oh, that's great. Have you ever met him?
No. Oh, God, I'd love to.
Well, put him on your list. You know.
Yeah.
And when you do, tell him to call me and I'll interview him. Oh, God. Well, you know, I hear in you such a gracious, generous heart. And what I know is that, you know, just like you said, if you hang around long enough, the good stuff happens, that the world needs what you have. And your willingness to put yourself out there and stake your claim, essentially, you know, kind of drawing the line in the sand and saying, this is what has to happen, and standing your ground in that, even that in itself, you know, it takes courage. I really do believe that in today's day and age, it takes courage to say what you believe and then hold to it. And that is demonstrating real leadership. I mean, you really show up as a leader in many ways, not just when you lead a company. And, you know, do you get the kind of response that you would like to get? You know, I mean, do people say, oh, Barry, you know, how nice for you? You know, or do they... What happened?
You know, I'm going out making speeches now, and somebody asked me, "Well, who do you want to speak to?" Well, I'll speak to anybody. I want to speak to everybody because it's a message that I think a lot of people need to hear. But I keep waiting. I figure if I talk to enough people, I'm certainly going to piss off a bunch of them, and I'll get in fights and stuff. But so far, that really hasn't happened.
Uh-huh.
Now, when I used to talk at business schools, this is a few years ago, I used to get a lot of stuff from kids who said, you know, nobody wants to be an entrepreneur. Nobody wants to be nice. That's not happening as much in business schools today. I think there might be a sea change. Maybe something really is going on. Maybe we're going to be nicer to each other. I don't know.
Well, you know, we can only hope, right? You know,
I'm hoping.
We've gone.
I think you
got to
be optimistic.
Well, you have to be optimistic. Well, you have to be optimistic in business. You can't be a pessimist and then, you know, be successful in business. And
not if you're going to be an entrepreneur.
That's right.
That's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, Barry, it's been a delight having you here this morning. We're coming to the end of our segment. And, you know, I appreciate the lessons that you passed along and wish you very well on the book. Tell us again what the title of the book will be.
We'll get rich a few days later.
We'll get rich a few days later. And look at what happened to you. It worked.
It did work.
It worked. So thanks again, Barry. And where's your, what's your website if people want to
it's
contact you?
It's www.barrybergman.com, and it's Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E.
Great. Barrybergman.com. And people can go to the website and download the show later today, tonight actually, and tomorrow, and it'll stay in the archives. So, Barry, thanks again. And remember, everybody, to think big, because the world could be a better place because of a conversation that matters. This is Cheryl Esposito.
Thank you for spending this hour with Cheryl Esposito and Leading Conversations. You can listen live every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on the Voice America Business Channel. If you have a question or comment for Cheryl, please email her at leadingconversations@alexaconsulting.com. That's leadingconversations@alexaconsulting.com. See you next week.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a price war among the major term life carriers. Consider these possible rates. A man age 45, non-tobacco user, could obtain $1 million of coverage for as little as $75 a month, and this rate is fixed for the next 10 years. We specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. A man age 50, non-tobacco user, may be able to obtain $500,000 of coverage for as little as $115 per month, and this rate is fixed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed not to change for 20 years. We have great rates for smokers too. For new or replacement term life insurance, call the Term Lifeline now. 800-890-5075. 800-890-5075. That's 800-890-5075.
You hear business show after business show all geared towards improving a company's bottom line. But what about your bottom line? How come no one ever talks about that? Finally, a show dedicated to the worker. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, the Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, the Crow Show is aimed specifically at the worker and their environment. From work skills and technology to dealing with bosses and coworkers, the Crow Show will give you insight on how to survive and prosper in today's workplace. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, the Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line of Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Leadership is a destination.
But how do you get there?
More importantly, how do you maximize your power and influence and develop more leaders in your organization? Learn from proven leaders and proven practices. Join Drs. Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler for Leadership Development News. This program will help you develop the next leaders in your organization, balance your work life, manage your boss, and
manage yourself.
We'll feature cutting-edge interviews with industry experts and authors. Leadership Development News, every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Why is Pepsi cooler than Coke? Why are iPods so popular? In 2005, how can you launch a successful brand? Want to know? Learn about the fascinating and intriguing world of graphic design and branding on Design Matters with Debbie Millman. Every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time, Debbie Millman will provide you with a provocative look into the stimulating world of design as it intersects with contemporary culture. Hear what the experts have to say about creating, maintaining, and launching a brand in today's challenging marketplace. Join us every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time for Design Matters with Debbie Millman, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
You hear business show after business show all geared towards improving a company's bottom line. But what about your bottom line? How come no one ever talks about that? Finally, a show dedicated to the worker. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, the Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, the Crow Show is aimed specifically at the worker and their environment. From work skills and technology to dealing with bosses and coworkers, the Crow Show...